episode of the Access Vikings podcast. My name is Andrew Kramer, joined by Ben Gessling via Zoom. After the NFL draft has concluded, the Minnesota Vikings have 7 new players via their draft picks, 17 more undrafted free agents. There's a select few you guys obviously want to hear about. We'll get to them and even more of what happened and what stood out to us of what the Vikings did and how they can proceed moving forward. But Ben, going back to Thursday night, we talked about J.J. McCarthy at number 10 overall. We talked about Dallas Turner at number 17 overall. We've since heard even more about their plans for both players, talking to people around TCO Performance Center. So starting with the quarterback, what do you think is going to be the plan with him, as they've got a quarterback room now that's got him, Sam Darnold, Jaren Hall, and Nick Mullins right now in that room?
Yeah, I mean, I think initially they're going to take it slow with him. I mean, we have seen – it may not look that different from what we've seen in the past, because their OTAs are pretty how would I put it? Not all that active. It's a lot of almost a glorified walkthrough. It's not quite to that degree, but it's a lot of breaks for teaching, for individual drills, for coaching points. You're not going to see a lot of 11 on 11 stuff. I mean, we're going to hear the question all spring: how's JJ looking? Throwback to 10 years ago. How's Teddy looking? We're not going to have a great answer to that by what we observe in the 3 or 4 OTAs that we see in addition to the minicamp days, because they just don't hit the gas in those periods as much as we might have seen, certainly under Mike Zimmer, and probably even going back to Leslie Frazier. It is a different approach to that. So this litmus test thing in the next few weeks, I don't think we're going to get that from J.J. McCarthy. It is going to be interesting, though, to hear what they think of how he's doing with classroom stuff, with footwork, all of the details that Kevin O'Connell talked about. He basically said no detail is too small, and they are going to spend a lot of time with him on those things because they feel like they have it. I don't think they want to put him on the field out of principle right away, unless he shows he's ready to do it. I don't think it's going to be a, we have to play him, he's got to learn by getting real game time experience, regular season experience. I don't think that's going to be the approach at all. So if he shows he's ready to take the job, that's a different thing. But I think otherwise they will do everything they can to not force it. And I think they'll have buy-in from the front office, from the ownership group on that front of things. I don't think there's going to be anybody telling Kevin O'Connell kind of what David Tepper told Frank Reich last year, or what we've heard about Dan Snyder doing with Dwayne Haskins in the past. I mean, some of those things. I don't think we're going to see that, which means they will let J.J. McCarthy, who's still only 21 years old, have his time to grow, you know, kind of at his own pace.
Grand Casino would like to take a moment and salute the true football fan. The passion. The hope. The anticipation. That incomparable feeling of winning. Grand Casino would also like to take a moment to remind you that you can find all that anticipation, thrill, and winning at Grand Casino. Grand Casino, let your story begin.
Yeah, if you want to feel old, J.J. McCarthy was born in January 2003.
Here is my, and I haven't mentioned this yet, J.J. McCarthy was born the day my wife and I started dating. We've been married, it'll be 19 years in October. So yeah, I saw the birthday, January 20th, 2003. I texted my wife like, you want to feel really old? Their new quarterback was born the day we started dating. So yeah, that one got me a little bit. But yeah, it's he's pretty young. And it's reminding me that I'm not.
Yeah, all of them. Yeah, you and me both. He was the youngest of the first round draft picks, a quarterback this year of the 6, as you mentioned, 21 years old. Also didn't have a ton of volume at Michigan either in terms of how often or how not often he threw the football.
So but was not able to drink when he won a national championship.
Oh, well, not legally. That's the key. Yep. Well, what did you think of what Kevin O'Connell had to say and Kwesi just about the evaluation of the quarterbacks, and what we know about how they went about really deciphering and evaluating these six in terms of their workloads, what they did in college, how long they were or weren't in college, because JJ was only in college for a few years and only on the field for a couple. He went 27 and 1 as a starter. He went 8-0 as a senior in high school, and I believe only lost two, maybe, or three games in high school before that. So he has not lost many games, but he also hasn't played a whole ton compared to the other guys they were evaluating.
Yeah, Kwesi said something the other day about when he talked to him on a Zoom call, he had all of, I don't know if he had all the rings on at that point, but he said he wears them one day a year, and all he has left is spots on his thumbs. I assume that's high school. That's probably Big Ten championships. Yeah. That's obviously a national championship. I don't know if you get a ring for winning a Rose Bowl in the semifinals, or I don't know, but he's won a lot. He hasn't played a lot, like you said. It was interesting to hear Kevin O'Connell talk a little bit about the evaluation process, because he said he really zeroed in on third downs. That was kind of the baseline, I think, for a lot of these quarterbacks. Certainly was for J.J. McCarthy, because obviously there's not a lot you can do to hide on a third down or dress up a third down. You're going to be throwing the ball. You're going to be dropping back. It's not going to be play action generally. It's not going to be RPOs generally. It's going to be, we need a first down. We need 8 yards. Everybody knows we're throwing it. They're coming after us. What happens? I mean, that's a pretty baseline situation that you're going to face a lot, and there's not really a lot you can do to dress it up. So he did a lot of work on that, and J.J. McCarthy's third down numbers were really good. Bo Nix, I think, was the only quarterback that had a higher completion percentage or passer rating on third down, but Bo Nix was playing in an offense that did not require him to push the ball downfield a whole lot. J.J. McCarthy's like average depth of target on third downs was 3 or 4 yards more than Nix was. So they, I think, saw a lot of things on third downs that will, they think, translate to the NFL. I mean, the big question with him is going to be, can he learn to put pace on the ball? I mean, the thing you always hear about him is he kind of throws at one speed. Everything is, you know, a fastball over the middle of the plate, so to speak, and you don't want it to be through the middle of somebody's face mask or breaking fingers when, you know, somebody's thrown over the middle trying to make a play. So, you know, learning to put pace on the ball, to put touch on the ball, I think is going to be something. It's going to be interesting to watch how he does with some of these throws where you have to put a ball over a linebacker's head. Can he kind of feather it over the top and still get enough pace on it so that the linebacker, or the wide receiver rather, can catch it in stride and beat safeties to the ball? Some of those throws you have to make in the NFL. And I think that's going to be a part of his game that they need to see him develop before they put him on the field. So things like that are going to be, I think, worth our attention this spring. And certainly we'll be keeping a closer eye on those things than we have probably with, you know, for a long time. It's been Kirk Cousins. Everybody knew it was going to be Kirk Cousins. This is going to be a lot different than that, and certainly something intriguing to watch for those of us who get to attend the OTAs and minicamp practices coming up.
Yeah, and from what we know, their evaluators went through enough of a comprehensive look at every throw all of these guys made to the point where, J.J. McCarthy's workload might not look so small when you're talking about the stuff you could actually grade or judge. So I think that's a big thing that, you know, you'll hear them talk about probably going forward in terms of what he did in college. And you mentioned the third down stuff. Kevin O'Connell's mentioned on the record that he joined the NFL draft broadcast on the third day. And he was even asked about JJ's, you know, when's McCarthy going to get on the field? And he was very diplomatic about being like, you know, we're not going to put a timeline on it. There's no sense in doing that. You can already tell it's going to be probably a very conservative approach, as you're talking about, with not rushing him on the field. But when those questions come up about how ready he is, O'Connell will point to, he uses the terms weighty downs. You talk about third downs. That's obviously part of what he's talking about. And that this kid came up big over and over for a team that won over and over. So, you know, for now they got all the answers in terms of who they ended up with, but it was also intriguing to hear more. We heard once from McCarthy the night that they drafted him, and that's when he got interrupted by Wayne Gretzky and you almost died. You almost died on your Skittles.
Yes.
And then we also heard from him.
Gretzky bothering Kevin Seifert.
We also heard from McCarthy and Dallas Turner the following day. And he seems like pretty mature for his age and pretty ready for the moment in terms of, Because you've seen some guys get up there and it's pretty obvious this is a 21-year-old kid showing up to a professional stadium. It's like, it's crazy how the longer you do this, the more, and the bigger college programs have gotten over the years, the more that somebody like that can walk into an NFL building at 21 and it not already seem too big for him in April, because he's literally been on a national championship stage.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's played in Michigan, obviously played for an NFL coach, has played in the CFP twice, I believe, right? Because didn't they get beat?
Yep. His only loss was the TCU loss 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they got beat pretty bad in that one, I think. But before he went to Michigan, he was at IMG Academy. So it's not like he's coming from small high school program that wasn't on a big stage there. I mean, you're not going to IMG Academy unless you don't have designs on doing this at a pretty high level. So, you know, that life of, I mean, I think, and I'm not saying this to endorse all of it. I don't know that all of it is a good thing just from a high school experience, but if this is your goal, that environment where you're traveling and playing in different spots is the closest thing you're going to get to an approximation of big time football in high school, and you know, probably outside of the state of Texas. I mean, but even the travel and managing all those things, that's more like a professional lifestyle. I mean, it's, you see this in a lot of different, I mean, certainly hockey, we see a lot in Minnesota schools like this, and he went to one of those. So from a football education standpoint, I think all of this leads to him coming in and not looking 21, not looking like he's wide-eyed by any of it. So how he does with it, I mean, he's certainly going to have a lot to learn, and I think he's going to have a lot to refine and probably a lot to prove before he gets on the field. But, you know, he talked a lot about basically almost wanting to wear coaches out and ask them so many questions that they have to be the ones to say, okay, kid, I got to be done. But I mean, we heard all the stories last year about Grant Udinski going through these 4 or 5 hour Friday afternoon cram sessions with Jaren Hall or Josh Dobbs when he's trying to get a guy ready to play. He's going to be doing a lot of that with JJ McCarthy. And JJ McCarthy, I think, is going to, at least what he talked about on Friday was, yeah, throw it all at me. If you've got time, I will take all of it to try to learn as much as I can. So between that, Josh McCown, Wes Phillips, Kevin O'Connell, Chris O'Hara, there are enough people for him to bend their ear and try to learn quickly. And I think that it sounds like his intention to do that.
Would you expect the Vikings to keep, obviously it's going to be Darnold and then McCarthy, maybe even Mullins as the backup, yeah, and then McCarthy as the three. Would you expect them to keep Jaren Hall as well, just to keep four quarterbacks? Because, hey, they played four last year already.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be interesting. I mean, they could put him on the practice squad, and all of those call-up rules now, I think, are you don't have to have QB3 on the roster now to call him up on game day. That they changed that rule this spring, so there's more flexibility there. I don't think Jaren Hall necessarily would be QB3 in this scenario, but yeah, we've seen injuries. I think they want to continue to develop him, and neither Darnold nor Mullins are signed after this year. So maybe, you know, in a perfect world, you have McCarthy as the starter and Hall as the number two that you continue to develop, and maybe you can trade him at some point. He's I think 3 or 4 years older than JJ McCarthy is, but
yeah.
You know, I think there's probably still a goal to do that, especially because you don't have long-term options yet, but there's only so many spots to go around. I would think if there's anybody that is in danger of getting cut, it would be more likely that it's him than Nick Mullins, I think, just because I would assume they'd want another buffer between JJ McCarthy and the field, or a premature entrance to the field, because we saw it with Jaren Hall last year. When you put a guy on the field before he's ready in that Packers game, New Year's Eve, Sunday night, with everything on the line, he looked overmatched. And I don't know that JJ McCarthy would have that same trajectory, but I think they want to avoid that if at all possible.
Before we move on to the defense and address what the Vikings did to help that side of the ball in the draft, Let's talk about quickly something that stood out to me was that they did not draft a running back, nor did they even bring one in on an undrafted free agency among the 17 guys they signed. So
surprised to me too.
I mean, when they brought in Aaron Jones, it was just a 1-year deal. I had presumed, and what you had heard all offseason was that they wanted to bring in running back talent.
Yep.
And it wasn't it when they signed Aaron Jones, I presumed it wasn't going to be just that. Do you think that was a matter of, because two things popped in my head. One, they must really like, you must believe O'Connell when he talks about liking Ty Chandler now, because that's basically the only option other than Aaron Jones. But then two, the Vikings probably aren't a very attractive spot in undrafted free agency for running backs. You know what I mean? Like them not signing one among the 17 doesn't mean they didn't go after one. And maybe in time we'll hear about guys that they went after and couldn't get here. It's literally been, 24 hours since the end of the draft. So at this point though, I could see them very much swinging and missing on guys in undrafted free agency because their agents are saying, you know what? They're not going to run the ball enough for you. They've already got Aaron Jones. Let's just go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, I think that's certainly a possibility because I certainly thought they would try to add somebody at that spot. I thought they may even draft somebody to add another running back to it because Aaron Jones is only signed for a year. Aaron Jones has been an injury concern in the past. Yeah. I mean, he got back on the field with fresh legs at the end of the season and really was kind of the engine that propelled the Packers to the playoffs. But that was because he'd missed so much time, and we've seen that happen with him a number of times in Green Bay over the years. And I don't think there's any reason to assume it'd be any different now. So between that and Ty Chandler at times, the concerns with pass protection, and you still have CJ Ham that can help with some of those things. But I did think they would add someone there, and there's always going to be running backs around that you can sign. I mean, you could go find a veteran free agent at some point, I'm sure, for a 1-year deal, and kind of, make a trade like they did for Cam Akers last year. Something like that may still happen. But I was a little surprised by that too. I thought they would probably try to get another rookie in here, not to the level that the Packers did it with Marshawn Lloyd, but a mid-round pick like that could come in and be part of the rotation. And maybe Kenny Wongwu is still that, but I don't necessarily think that that's the priority for him at this point. So yeah, I was surprised that they didn't do more with it.
Yeah, they don't have a whole lot behind. You mentioned CJ Ham, but it's Miles Gaskin, it's Kenny Wongwu, it's Dwayne McBride, who didn't make the 53 last year and really had a lot of room to grow just watching him run in training camp last year. So we'll see how the second year goes. But I was surprised to see that. And again, it doesn't mean that they didn't take swings at guys in undrafted free agency and just didn't land them. Because again, if I'm an agent, which I'm not, I'm not a doctor, but I wouldn't tell my guy to go to Minnesota if he were a running back, right? You're just not going to get the opportunity. So anyway, it doesn't mean, again, they clearly didn't prioritize it, because you can always buy people. You can always spend enough money to bring people in. So they clearly did not prioritize it, because you can also draft them. Instead, Ben, they drafted a kicker, another kicker. So again, little offshoot before we go to the defense here. Will Reichard, I believe, out of Alabama, was a 5-year kicker. They're bringing in a couple 25-year-oldish rookies in with this 7-man draft class. What did you think of that move?
Well, I thought they needed to do something there. I mean, John Parker Romo was the only kicker on the roster, and I am interested to see how this goes, because John Parker Romo is one of the few kickers in the NFL that has had experience with the new kickoff rules, which are going to be very, very different than anything we've ever watched. I mean, he kicked in the XFL, so he does have some experience there. I don't think they'll do this, but just as a brief sidebar, I wonder if they think about keeping them both, or keeping him on the practice squad just to have another guy that has done this. I mean, at the very least, I think training camp, you keep him around because he's a leg that gives your return and your kick coverage units opportunities to practice all this stuff, because he's done it before. So I think there's utility there, but Will Reichard, I would think, would be the kicker. I don't think you're going to draft a guy in the 5th round and not have him be the kicker. We've seen this twice. doesn't mean it'll go this way, because obviously the head coach probably is going to have a little different approach with kickers when they struggle than the previous crucible that Blair Walsh and Daniel Carlson found themselves in. Blair Walsh, of course, drafted by Leslie Frazier, misses the infamous kick for Mike Zimmer, ends up getting released by Mike Zimmer, SEC kicker, comes to the Vikings. Daniel Carlson came to the Vikings out of Auburn, misses the three kicks at Lambeau Field week two, gets cut, goes on to be a Pro Bowler in Oakland, now Las Vegas. So you hope it works out a little better than that. But Will Reichert had an awfully good fifth year. I mean, I think he didn't miss an extra point. I think he missed three field goals and was 5 of 5 from 50 plus. So didn't have some of the struggles that Walsh and Carlson did in their last years in college. So, you know, maybe he'll be ready to go. But yeah, I would assume that's your new kicker, you know, as he goes to Lambeau Field, trying to be a rookie that succeeds there with possibly Greg Joseph as the kicker on the other sideline. So that'll be certainly interesting to watch.
Yeah, it's my understanding the Vikings didn't obviously make Greg Joseph much of a competitive offer to return. Yeah. And he goes to Green Bay, where he's one of three kickers, including the brother of Daniel Carlson and Anders Carlson, on that Packers roster. So Greg Joseph, if he beats Anders Carlson in Green Bay, could be kicking against the Vikings and Will, the new Vikings kicker out of Alabama. So yeah, it's always interesting. I found it interesting that we heard from one Vikings scout, Steve Sabo, who said after the pick, he said, "Hey, this guy played under Nick Saban, so he's at least had it, you know, difficult before."
Yeah.
So, like, these guys, and obviously some of these scouts have been here a long time, including when Mike Zimmer was here.
Yep.
It is not going to be like that under Kevin O'Connell. It's going to be a much different environment as it was for Greg Joseph. But I just found that interesting that in their evaluation, they know, like, under certain coaches, if you got to play under Nick Saban, that says something about who you are if you can succeed in that environment.
Yeah, I think that's true. And obviously you're playing on a national stage every week. You're playing a big game every week. I don't know how many times you're kicking in close games. I mean, obviously there's enough good teams in the SEC that Alabama's played some close games. I mean, especially the last couple of years when they haven't been quite as dominant. But it is interesting to hear that from a scout that's been around, because it's not hard to think of the context there for some of these kickers that come in, and there's a lot of pressure, and you know, you're one of the younger guys in a locker room, and kickers are sort of seen like insurance salesmen or something anyway, that, you know, a lot of times in locker rooms, people are like, well, I have to have one. I don't really think terribly fondly of it, but you know, you just have to have one. So there's a weird dynamic there that some guys can internalize a little bit, I think, and use to put pressure on themselves. So kicking for Nick Saban at Alabama would seem like a pretty good thing to have on your resume to show that you can handle it.
Well, let's move on to the defensive side. The Vikings only take, I believe, three defenders out of these seven draft picks. That would be Dallas Turner, Kyrie Jackson, the corner out of Oregon, and Levi Drake Rodriguez, the defensive tackle out of Texas A&M, not that one, the one out of Commerce, Texas, where there's 9,000 people and 11,000 capacity football stadium, and a program that just became D1 a couple years ago.
Yeah.
The Vikings are in love with this kid, though, according to Ryan Grigson, who is one of their top assistant general managers, and evaluates guys in the trenches like Mr. Rodriguez. So Ben, what did you think about what they did defensively, starting with Turner and going on through obviously the corner that they brought in too?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the pass rushing thing was a big need. I mean, I thought that may take the form of taking in a defensive tackle that could kind of provide some interior pass rush, and Rodriguez may end up being that, but Dallas Turner is one of those picks that I think we talked about it a little bit Thursday night, that in a normal draft that's not so slanted towards offense, he's probably, I don't know, like the 8th overall pick or something like that.
Yeah.
Probably goes quite a bit higher than he did.
I bet Kirk Cousins would have loved to have had him.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yes. That would have been the 8th pick. He would have probably preferred that to what they actually did taking Michael Penix. You're exactly right. And that would have made a lot of sense given the fact that their pass rush is not terribly formidable down in Atlanta. So, yeah, I mean, you're going to continue to see this kind of mix and match, this shape-shifting kind of approach with the front seven, I think, and probably making it so that you have guys that are a little fresher too. I mean, we've seen the Eagles do this to great effect over the last few years, where you have all these guys that play 500 snaps a year, not 1,000 like the Vikings had so many guys doing last year. I mean, you just get beat up and you're out of gas by the end of the season if you have that. So between Grenard, Van Ginkle, Dallas Turner, we'll see if Jihad Ward ends up getting some run in that spot. But then you got Jonah Williams, Jerry Tillery up front. Certainly a lot more versatility, probably more depth in that spot. So Turner makes a lot of sense in that regard. We'll see what kind of a role he ends up with. But yeah, it certainly makes a lot of sense at that spot. Kyree Jackson was the one mock draft pick that I nailed. I had him coming here at 108. When they're talking about wanting corners that can play man coverage and can be physical, he's that. I mean, he's 6'4", like 195, runs a good 40, but, you know, has some of the issues that tall corners have, where it's how well are you going to be able to change directions and mirror routes and break down. And it does not seem like he's afraid of hitting and tackling. So, you know, run support with the corners, I should say, was a need last year, and he'll probably get a chance to do that. I'm very curious to see how the corner thing works out, because they want to put Byron Murphy back inside. Shaq Griffin probably gets one of the spots, but then you've got all of these kind of lottery tickets at the other spot. Is it Caleb Evans going to get his job back? Is Andrew Booth going to show anything in year three? Is Mekhi Blackmon going to improve from what he did in year one? Is Kyree Jackson end up coming in here as a fourth round pick as a rookie? I mean, we've seen that before with Evans. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot to determine there, and maybe they still try to add a corner, but that I think is certainly one of the things to watch as we go through the next couple of months, because they need somebody to come in and play well, especially if they want more of these guys to play in man coverage without as much safety help and just say, hey, go cover this guy and stick with him wherever he goes.
Yeah. And then this offseason with Jackson, the fourth round pick, and Shaquille Griffin, they've brought in, they've brought in 2 6-foot plus corners who can who can press and theoretically play man coverage, which Brian Flores, as he's talked about, wants to blend more into what they do. And he, I thought he very tactfully discussed, you know, in my past in Miami, I used to do that more. It's like, well, no kidding. You were like leading the league for years over there in man coverage and blitz rate, doing, you know, cover zero out the wazoo. Yeah. And then he comes here and has to invent a new, you know, not invent, but basically you've talked about the kind of different zone coverages they came up with where, you know, they would just abandon certain areas of the field because of how much they were blitzing. We heard from more of their talent evaluators and scouts who talked about how impressive it was what Flores did and how excited they were to get more pieces for him to see what he can do with that. And I think Jackson's one of the most intriguing ones, because Ryan Grigson mentioned that Jackson walks into the NFL as one of the biggest corners right now at 6'3.5". And typically that's a size that people think he has to play safety or closer to the line of scrimmage. But they vouched for his movement skills, his ability to, as they say in football parlance, sink his hips and really get in and out of breaks for a guy his size. And you mentioned the hitting. He talked about Kyrie in his post-draft presser, talked about how when he transferred to Oregon, Coach Dan Lanning, he said, he let me play my style, which was a much more physical style that risked getting flags in a way that Nick Saban, he didn't say this, but the subtext is that Nick Saban was not about that life. And so I think this guy does play a much more physical style that Brian Flores seems to like and the Vikings are enamored with. So they tried to retool that spot. The fourth round pick doesn't scream like that's a big addition. But the Vikings seem to think his physical tools are better than that of your standard fourth round pick.
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly the size speed stuff is an intriguing package. If all of it works, I mean, it could be a nice find. He is an interesting story too, in the sense of he basically quit football and was, I think, working at a grocery store.
So he ended up bouncing around a lot. Yeah, he didn't have the grades to get Division One offers, so he ended up going to a JUCO in Arizona, in Yuma, Arizona, which if anybody knows, that's literally the corner of Arizona.
Yes.
And he left
like at the Mexican border, right?
Yeah, and he left after a few weeks. He said to go back home, and he said he was so embarrassed about that decision because he had friends that were like 4 and 5 star recruits. He said he lied to his friends and didn't tell them he was home. And he said he told them he was still at JUCO off in Arizona. And he said after 6 months, he finally came out and told him, like, I quit football and I don't want to go back. And he was, working a grocery store. He said he was employee of the month. He said he was getting really into video games and was actually a 2K, NBA 2K, like in tournaments. He said he got into the top 250 nationally to get into a tournament in New York. And he
trying
said
to
that,
consider making this a career, right?
I mean, yeah, and which, yeah, it,
you do.
Old guys like us wouldn't know anything about that, but apparently you can do that now.
I hear kids I coach talk about, I could get a scholarship gaming. It's like, yeah, you could. I mean, I don't know how many of them are around yet, but you could.
That's incredible. So apparently he was going to go that route not that long ago. This was 2018. And he said that's when one of the guys who tried to recruit him out of a JUCO in Kansas reached out and said, do you still want to play football? And he said, I thought about it for 2 days and eventually said yes, because I wanted to pursue that dream again. And so you talk about incredible story. It really is, because it went from that decision to just jumping back into it. And he went back as a wide receiver because that's what he started at in high school. And then he switched over to corner because he said one day Pat Surtain was his coach. He said it was Pat Surtain's dad. And I'm trying to remember the spot, the college, but he said he walked into Pat Surtain's office, I think, and basically said that he wanted to switch positions. And the first rep, he just knocked it out of the park, and the rest is history. So, an incredible story, and it'll be interesting to see if he makes anything of himself in the NFL, but. That I think was by far their biggest addition defensively on day three, because other than that, it was just the defensive tackle out of Texas A&M Commerce. So,
Who started at an NAI school and then ended up going to Texas A&M Commerce. I think it was a baseball and football player at Southwest Assemblies of God, I think was the college he was at before he transferred. That guy is like, just a ball of energy. I mean, you heard Brian Grigson talk about this too, but he was on a conference call with us and he was very excited, very energetic. Obviously to get drafted, you see a lot of guys that are, but even by the standards of this is the greatest day of my life kind of energy that you get from guys on those things, he was quite effervescent, so to speak.
He really was. Yeah. he had quite the journey too. He talked about very religious man, talked about fasting for 7 days on his decision to leave that NAIA program to walk on to Texas A&M Commerce, where he earned a scholarship and got drafted. Crazy story. So and we didn't even mention the offensive tackle they took in the sixth round who went to the same high school.
Graduated, same graduating class, right?
Yeah, Sasha Obama in D.C. So
yeah,
he talked about it brought back memories, Ben, of, do you remember, what was the name? I think it was Tyrus Thompson, an old offensive lineman the Vikings took, whose mother was a sniper or mother-in-law was a sniper.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yes. Yeah, I remember that one. They're like they had some fun with that.
Yeah.
That spring, I think that, I mean, I think Zim brought that up. Like it was his mother was a sniper. Like, wait, what? So that one, Walter Rouse was talking about having Secret Service officers outside their classroom doors, and it just kind of became the normal thing. This would have been like after Barack Obama's presidency ended and they were still living in DC, so kids could finish school before they moved out of DC, I think. So he graduated with Sasha Obama and then went to Stanford, where he was like some high level medical thing, right? Like
biomedical engineering, I believe.
Yeah. So, as somebody said yesterday, one of the scouts said, learning an NFL playbook will not be a challenge for him. So certainly some interesting, I mean, the real winners in this are us, because they drafted a lot of guys with interesting backstories, which means our training camp human interest stories every day. We could knock all these out. I mean, it's interesting though to hear some of these things when you talk about guys like Jackson or Rodriguez. You have these guys that kind of stared an exit from football in the face and said, I'm going to make this work and do whatever I have to do to get to this level. So you talk about the level of competition they're going to have in a number of spots. And I asked Kwesi about this yesterday. He said, you kind of put guys in buckets, but then when you're either breaking ties or figuring out who's going to kind of be above somebody on a board, you do start to talk about what makes them tick. How, you know, what are they going to do to better themselves? How far are they willing to go? And he said, you know, you don't always know that somebody did something 3 years ago and it means they're going to project it to the NFL and do all of these things consistently. But it does tell you a little bit more about the person. And when there's going to be this level of competition, guys like that, who are, I think, especially in the case of those two, Jackson or Rodriguez, can bring a lot of energy. You know, it probably spices the whole thing up a little bit as we get into mini camp and training camp.
Absolutely. And we will talk to you guys as the Vikings offseason rolls along with OTAs later this month into the minicamp Ben is talking about and training camp later this summer. Please check out all of our work at StarTribune.com. We have stories on all of those different draft picks if you want to learn more, as well as Ben's recap of this draft and takeaways from the draft going up soon. Again, please check out all the work at StarTribune.com.